Thanks, Dave. My name's Lisa and I'm an addict.
Right into the microphone.
Okay. Haven't used one of these microphones to do a share before, so Dave, let me know if I'm drifting, please. I had no idea that this was such a big meeting. I didn't know that there was a microphone involved. And I didn't realise I had to talk for so long. I'm an alternate secretary of a small lunchtime meeting, and the chair usually shares for 10 minutes, and I usually talk for about 20 seconds before I open up to the room, so this feels very different. My first meeting of Narcotics Anonymous was in the crypt in Trafalgar Square, just next door. That was nearly 26 years ago. I was 24 and I was dying. And I rang a friend of mine who I did a lot of using with to get some smack. And he said, "Lisa, I'm clean and I've just come out of treatment and I go to something called Narcotics Anonymous. Let me take you to a meeting." And he took me to the crypt. And I don't remember that much. All I remember thinking was, once a junkie, always a junkie, and I'm going to die a junkie. And how is this going to help? But he sort of, we went and had coffee afterwards. We didn't go and score because I couldn't, you know, I'd done so much using with this guy, I couldn't understand that we wouldn't go and score. And he took me to another meeting a few days later. There was only two NA meetings a week in London. And I went to my second meeting, and this guy was who was doing the show was talking about his problems with his laundry. And I just thought, you know, I'm a heroin addict. Why am I sitting here listening to someone talking about their laundry? But I went up to him afterwards to open my mouth. I didn't even know what I was going to say, but I just burst into tears. And for the first time in my life as a drug addict, I got this glimmer of hope that actually I didn't have to die a junkie and I could get better, and that possibly it was through Narcotics Anonymous. And I ended up going into a treatment center. I was very lucky. I wouldn't go to AA, and it was advised then to do a lot of AA meetings because there wasn't much NA. And I was not an alcoholic. There was no way I was an alcoholic. I was a junkie. It had much more of a ring to it than being an alcoholic. Even though now I do, and thank God, I realized this, you know, when I was in treatment, if I couldn't get my drug of choice, anything would do. And if I did drink, I drank from the bottle, and I drank not to feel, and I drank to obliviate. I never drank to taste the alcohol. So I was very lucky. when I put the drugs down, I put the drink down as well. And for me, they're all the same. But I ended up going into this treatment center in the West Country. I thought I was going for a few weeks. I ended up being in halfway house for about 6 months after primary treatment in a little seaside place called Weston-super-Mare, which I've never been back to. don't intend to go back. Doing Meals on Wheels and but staying clean. And that was over 25 years ago. And I haven't yet, as of today, picked up a drug or a drink, which for me is a miracle. It's extraordinary. It's absolutely extraordinary. Because all I've ever done, really, in the last 25 years, is pitch up at these meetings. I've worked the steps, I've not worked the steps, I've had sponsors, I've not had sponsors. I asked someone the other day to be my sponsor, and she'd reminded me she'd been my sponsor years ago, and I'd completely forgotten. Completely. And, you know, I don't think that's just because I'm hitting 50 this year. Maybe it is, but, you know, I've done everything and anything. I remember just before I got clean, I was working in this hamburger restaurant. I don't think they exist anymore, the Great American Disaster. And it was at the time of punk, and I thought I was very cool, and I was a cashier, and I made a lot of money, ripping off the customers. And I remember one of the first jobs I got in recovery, there was this restaurant, and there was quite a few people in recovery working as waiters. And they needed a cashier. And I thought, fine, that's great. And, you know, I'm not going to, you know, I'm clean now. I'm a member of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm a responsible human being. Let me tell you, the moment that till opened, my hands were in there. And because that's all I'd known. You know, that for me was my security. You know, security for me, for years and years and years, was having money so that I could go and get my drugs. And I would do anything to get stoned. I would do anything to obliviate. It didn't matter who I had to sleep with, what I had to do, who I had to steal from, I would do it to get my drug of choice, or any drug for that matter. And here I was, sort of a year clean in NA, not needing drugs or alcohol, but that feeling of security, having just in case I woke up tomorrow and the whole thing was a dream and I needed to go out and use. The difference was I felt awful. I felt so bad and I couldn't go and use on it. I couldn't obliviate. And I ended up sharing it in a meeting when it got really bad, and I stopped being a cashier at that restaurant, and I also stopped stealing. But, you know, even up until recently, I've just retired. I mean, I'm so young still, but I'm so old and tired. But I've just sort of had my own business for a long time and worked all the way through my recovery. And even though it was my own business, I wouldn't handle the cash. And I'd let other people handle the cash, even though I would have been stealing from myself. But I just, you know, it was something that was so part of my life. In this halfway house that I went to in Weston-super-Mare, I started to feel, for the first time in my life, I started to really feel, and I didn't have the drugs to take those feelings away, and they were feelings of complete and utter self-hatred and self-loathing. I hated the way I looked. I put on an enormous amount of weight in treatment. I put the drugs down and I picked up the biscuits. I hated the way I was jealous of everyone and anyone. I was jealous of other women. I was jealous of people with clean time. I was jealous of people who didn't have to be in a halfway house. I was jealous of my sisters. I was jealous of everyone. And I didn't like doing Meals on Wheels. I didn't like living in a house with six other women and sharing a room with two other women. And I started to feel all these things, and in the end I just thought, I can't do this. You know, this is not for me. I thought recovery was going to be about enjoying life, getting on with life and feeling good about myself. And I made a decision to leave and to go back to London and go and use. I didn't think about anything else about what would happen after that. I just needed to go and get rid of those feelings. And luckily I was in a halfway house with other women, and they saw what I was going to do and they stopped me. And I think for the first time, really and truly, I asked for help, unconditional help. And I got it. And I got it from those women, and I got it from NA meetings. And since then, I've never looked back. I mean, I've just been so extraordinarily lucky, because I think I realized from quite early on in my recovery the power of these rooms. It doesn't matter where I am in the world, where I am in London, where I am in my life, I have these rooms. I don't know how this program works. I'm lucky, and this is for me, I don't analyze too much, thank God, because I think, you know, I'm complicated enough. I don't try and analyze this program. I just know it works. And it works for me. I know that I can get up in the morning and not just be obsessed all day, 24/7, about where I'm going to get the drugs so as not to feel. And in the end, for me, it was to stay sane. All the enjoyment I got, and I do sometimes have euphoric recall. I lived I did a lot of geographicals, and one of them was to New York, and I had a very strange experience last week. I'm now a mother and happily married, which is very strange itself. I never thought that would happen. It's wonderful. I have 10-year-old twin boys, and they've been desperate for the last year to go to New York. So we took them there on half term last week and did all the sort of things that you would normally do. But I also insisted on going down. They have Sex Pistols t-shirts and Rolling Stones. I mean, they have all these sort of... Luckily, they like the music that I like, or they say they do anyway. usually at 7:30 in the morning, on our way to school, we're listening to Guns N' Roses, and I did it my way by Sid Vicious, but they seemed to like it. Anyway, I insisted we go down in this sort of place where I used to get all my t-shirts, drugs. Then I ended up going to NA when I was 2 or 3 years clean and I was out there. And I remember walking down the street with these two boys and just thinking, there was nothing cool about it. What for me is cool is being in New York with two boys who I love more than anything in the world, who have never seen their mother stoned, who just know their mother loves them for them, and it's an extraordinary feeling. I never thought I'd ever have kids. I never thought I'd ever meet someone who would love me for me, completely unconditionally. It didn't happen for a long time. I watched everyone else around me in NA start going out with people and getting married and having kids. And I was 35 before... So that was, you know, 10 years into recovery before I met the man I eventually married. You know, I had my work, I had my meetings, and I had enough self-belief, self-respect, self-worth, I don't know what you want to call it, to, you know, I'd spent so many years doing things because I had to do them, you know, because I had to do stuff to either get my drugs or in the end stay clean, that I'd sort of got to a place in my recovery where I was actually happy with my own space and my own time, and I didn't have to be with someone to feel good about myself. And I also had my work. I've, you know, been a complete workaholic for most of my recovery. And I met this guy when I was 35, and within hours of meeting him, I was in love. I don't know, he just had this wonderful open face, this great face that was just full of life and wanting to and loving life. He's not in these rooms. He was not put off when I told him I was a recovering drug addict. He was not put off when our first holiday together, my ex-boyfriend, who was also a great, great friend of mine, who was in these rooms for about 12 years, and then he died of AIDS. And he died clean. And he, you know, he wasn't put off by any of that, and he just loved me for me, and he still does. And even when I couldn't get pregnant, and I ended up doing fertility, so suddenly here I was, many years clean, sticking needles into me, which was very, very strange, really strange, but I just had to keep remembering that, you know, these needles had nothing to do with, well, it was drugs, it was fertility drugs, but, you know, I would just sort of, he would do it when I stood asleep in the morning, and I was just, anyway, it worked, and I got pregnant with my boys, and put on about 120 pounds when I was pregnant. They told me to eat, and I ate for England. Still trying to lose it 10 years later, but a day at a time, as they say. You know, fat, thin, bad-tempered, not. There's this love that's just extraordinary, and I never, ever, ever, ever thought I'd ever find that. And all I've ever done is come to meetings, try and feel better about myself, day at a time, do things that make me feel better about myself. I have a lot more humility than I used to. I'm actually now, and I can say this, I guess, because I didn't die, and I have buried a lot of friends, but I think going through what I went through has made me a much nicer person. I'm not as judgmental as I used to be. I used to be incredibly judgmental. And actually, it's probably only recently that I haven't been so judgmental, and it's probably because I'm getting so old now, I can't remember anything anymore. But, you know, it just, I have a real love of life. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago I was dying. I couldn't get out of bed unless I had an armful of junk. And friends had no meaning, family had no meaning. My sisters were, I mean, I never used to see my sisters. I never read a newspaper, I never cared about anyone else. You know, all these things have come back to me, and it is just all I've done is show up to these rooms, whether I've been happy, sad, sleeping with someone in the rooms, not sleeping with someone in the rooms, lying, cheating, not lying, cheating, whatever it is, I've just kept coming to Narcotics Anonymous meetings. I'm still not good at going to AA. You know, people often say to me, oh, there's such long-term recovery in AA, and it's so, you know, wise. I found everything I've needed in Narcotics Anonymous meetings. But that's just me. Maybe it's too wise for me, I don't know. Maybe they'll see through my recovery, I don't know. I don't think so. I know I'm in the right place. and I love these rooms. I had a very very strange experience today. I went and did a 12-step in Newbury down the M4. You were talking about the M4 earlier, and this great friend of mine, we've known each other since we were four, and she sort of discovered hard drugs through me. 25, I went into treatment and got clean. At 25, she's my age, she's 50 this year. She went to the country and continued taking drugs and is now a mother of the sweetest, I met them today for the first time, sweetest 12-year-old girl and 14-year-old boy. And she's taking so much smack and so many pills, and she's dying. And she contacted me recently and asked for help. And hopefully, even though I did leave her some money, and I knew she was going to go in school, hopefully I'll be taking her into treatment on Monday. But walking into this house and just seeing the empty fridge and the filthy, filthy kitchen and living room and the dealer who had been sleeping on the sofa, who was, I guess, waiting for me to turn up because Mandy had probably said that I had a bit of money and was going to take her off to school. And this little 12-year-old girl, so frightened, and so frightened about what was or wasn't going to happen, and so fed up with coming home after school to an empty fridge, but at the same time loving her mum so much, and this 14-year-old boy who was so full of anger on the one hand, but so protective over his little sister. And, you know, this was the woman who, you know, we grew up together, we went to the same school, we did the same things together, and I guess my higher power was just looking, I mean, it's extraordinary. She went one way and I went the other way. But she's still alive, and God willing, you know, she'll get better and those kids will get help. But, you know, this afternoon I was just sitting in the car with her daughter, and I said, well, how's your half term been? She said, well, I've just either been sitting in the car waiting for my mum to school, because she has to school 3 times a day. Or I've been down at my nan's to get some food. And I just thought, you know, I might not be perfect, and I'm not. I'm bloody tricky. And people who know me know I'm very, very tricky. And ask my husband. I mean, thank God he loves me, because, you know, he has such, you know, it's not easy being with me, but I'm clean, I'm sober, I'm there for my kids, and I'm not out there like my friend is. And it wasn't easy to start with, and for me, my first year of recovery was really difficult, because I hated myself, as I was saying, so much. But with the help of everyone in these rooms, I just didn't pick up that drug or drink. I just knew. I knew if I picked up a drug or a drink, I would die. You know, I'd seen it happen to so many people. And also, I knew that if I didn't die, it would take me a long time to come back from a relapse. You know, and I also kept thinking of that halfway house. And I didn't want to go back there. I really didn't want to go back there. But I don't find recovery easy. I still don't like talking about my feelings. I still, you know, get into my car and put on Sid Vicious, I Did It My Way, at loud volume at the times when I'm, you know, but that's fine. I still, if I could, some mornings, in fact, I was like this yesterday, you know, if I could not get out of bed and just stay under that duvet, I would. And in fact, yesterday, I went back to bed in the middle of the afternoon, something I don't think I've ever done. I gave up work because I could. I have a husband who works, and financially we're okay. And I wanted to be there for my boys. I found a lot of my identity through my work. It's probably been the toughest thing I've done in recovery. It's only been the last 6 months. I don't like other mums at the school gates. I don't like going to mother's coffee mornings. I'm not a lady who lunches. But it's the right thing for me. But it's bloody difficult, because I've suddenly found that I've got a lot of time in the day when it's just me. You know, it's me in a supermarket, or me, you know, buying school clothes or getting school clothes ready, or waiting to go and pick up the kids from school. And it's very, very strange. Very strange. But the boys love it. And I needed to do this because one of my boys has a very addictive personality. Whether that will continue, I don't know. Whether by me really being there will help, I don't know. But I know when I was young, and I've got two younger sisters who were not affected, but I was really affected by both my parents working. And I never felt that they were there for me, and I never felt understood, and I always felt abandoned. And even though I know now, today, they only did what they their best, and they always loved me, and they always looked after me in their way. But for me, I needed more than that. I needed to feel understood, and I didn't feel I was understood. I was probably too impossible to be understood. I mean, I was very, the more I find out about what I was, because I don't remember what I was like, but as my sister continually tells me, I was just horrible to have as an older sister. And my mother likes to tell me that I was very, very tricky. And I certainly know that I never got any exams at school. I never got 1-0 level or GSE or anything like that, and was losing myself in drugs when I was about 15. So whether it's going to make a difference or not, I don't know. But for me, I know I'm doing the right thing, and that's good enough for me. But it's very strange. It really is. I spend so much time now on the computer, on the internet, and reading newspapers, and I don't know. It's a different. But you know, to be able to do this at the age of 50 is fantastic, because I've worked all my life. I've never ever not worked, and it just shows that with these rooms and not using a day at a time and not drinking, anything is possible. And that is such freedom. And I think that was one of the things that I've been thinking about a lot today. Because of course on the M4 coming back from Newbury, there was not one but two accidents. So what was normally an hour's drive was 3.5 hours sitting in the car. But it was fine, you know, I didn't freak out, and someone else picked up my kids from school, and I just sort of thought about things, and Claire reminded me that I was doing the share tonight, and I started to think about freedom. And that is something I never had before, because I was tied to my drugs, and I was tied to my self-hatred. It was drugs and self-hatred. I think I've always had low self-esteem. Ever since I was a child. I was also very dyslexic, and I don't think that was picked up at school. And right from what I can remember, I've always suffered from low self-esteem. And today, I don't have that. And that is such freedom. I mean, it's extraordinary. You know, to be able to get up in the morning and not feel weighed down by that all the time is just, you know, it's just amazing. And I haven't been feeling that positive the last few days. I have been feeling a little bit blue. But today I feel really good. I'm a trustee of an addiction charity. We have halfway houses and treatment centres and drop-in places, and that's a really wonderful thing to be part of that and to be a trustee. I'm also a trustee of a school for kids that no other school will take, and it's their last stop before Borstal, and I've been hanging out with them a bit recently, and I feel very privileged. You know, these are things I would never have done before. It's extraordinary. I mean, it really is extraordinary. I was asked the other day to be a governor of the London Film School, because my career was in film. I think they think I've got lots of time on my hands. I'm quite good at fundraising because I'm just very tricky and I don't take no for an answer. So I think they think that I can come in and... But a governor, I mean, it just sounds so sort of, you know, old, which I suppose I am, and so proper. You know, do they realise that I'm just a recovering drug addict, you know? It's extraordinary. It's very, you know, what life throws up today. And it is exciting and it is challenging, but it is difficult. And I still, you know, my husband, we were invited to go out to dinner last night, people we know. I just didn't want to go. I didn't feel good enough about myself. I didn't feel I had anything to talk about. I suddenly felt like a very boring housewife, and I just didn't want to go. And he looked at me and I said, look, you go. And he said, I want to go with my wife. I don't want to go alone. I want to go with you, Lisa. I'm proud of you and I want to be with you. We ended up in bed watching the football, which is usually the case. Sadly, he and my boys support Arsenal, as I've been a Chelsea supporter all my life, but we have fun in the house, and hopefully we will thrash Tottenham on Sunday, but probably not. Anyway, I feel like I've spoken for hours and hours and hours. I keep waiting for Dave to tap me on the shoulder, but he hasn't yet. So you're going to have to listen to me, I'm afraid, for a few more minutes. I do try and work the steps. I've always been very rebellious about... not rebellious, I suppose it's the wrong word. I suppose in a way it's sort of more lazy about anything to do with any written steps. I always sort of feel, well, as long as I'm clean and sober, that's fine. That's enough. That's extraordinary in itself. But I have, during my recovery, hit some real blocks. And I'm, you know, annoyingly that kind of person. I'm not someone who's going to make any changes without my back being up against the wall. So I do work the steps, not all the time, but I do genuinely now believe, for me, that working the steps is a really important part of my recovery. I do have sponsees. I need a sponsor at the moment. I went to my first Al-Anon meeting last week. It was horrible. But I took someone who asked me to take them. Her husband is early in recovery. And actually, the reason I didn't like it is because I had rules. And many more rules than NA seems to have. And I'm someone still, I'm just so, you know, give me a rule and I'm out of there. But actually, you know, I am the child of an alcoholic. My mother's an alcoholic. She's a practicing alcoholic. And, you know, I did get something out of it. So, I try and have an open mind today. I try and not be so closed. And it's a great feeling. It really is a great feeling. I think I've probably said enough now. I'm trying to think of what else. But for anyone who is new out there, it still feels like yesterday that I came to the crypt with nothing apart from a serious, serious addiction. Just knowing that I was going to die. And I didn't. And not only that, I just have a life today that I love. I really do love it. For all the tough days, when I look at it as a whole, I'm really proud to be part of the human race. And that is totally through Narcotics Anonymous and everyone in these rooms. And what will happen with my boys? Who knows? But they've got a mum who loves them totally and utterly unconditionally. And we have a really lovely little family unit. And God, I'm lucky. And especially after what I saw today. And I just wanted to take this little girl and boy and just bring them back to London. But I can't fix that. And I have to step back and really practice step three on that. And it's going to be very difficult. It's going to be really, really difficult. And but I have the support with my friends in recovery and with the people in these rooms. So for anyone who is new, keep coming back. As the saying goes, it really does work if you work it. Thanks very much.